This homily on the stillness, the hesychia of the monk in his cell, was given at the holy monastery of Philotheo. An elder said, "Eat, drink, sleep, and do not step outside your cell." Whatever our fathers said, they said it out of their own experience. It comes straight out of their lives. It is an expression of their hidden spiritual work. There is nothing misguided in what they left to us, their spiritual children, as a spiritual inheritance. They learn through experience the benefit of solitude within the cell. When a person practices hesychia in his cell, that inner stillness helps him preserve the remembrance of God. He must have his salvation consciously in mind and remain in his cell with understanding, not because he cannot be bothered to go out, and not because he despises other people, but because he stays there intending to do spiritual work. For when a person departs this life, according to the tradition of the fathers, it is said that during the 40 days after his death, and even afterward if his soul is saved, the soul visits the places where it lived in this life. During those 40 days in particular, it goes with its guardian angel, who at each place the person knew, reveals to him and tells him how he lived here. In this place you sinned, in another place you practiced this virtue. Here you helped someone, here you wept, here you prayed, here you judged someone, here you said this or that. How blessed it will be when we too find ourselves in that state, and the angel speaks to us so consolingly. In this cell you labored for the salvation you now enjoy, the salvation in which you place your hope after the 40 days, when you will stand before the Lord for the final judgment. Then, once your eternal place has been definitively appointed, you will know by experience the benefit you gained in this very place. There is nothing misguided in what our fathers taught. In his little cell, a person strives to gather his nous, the spiritual intellect, from distraction and direct it toward spiritual reading and prayer. There he judges himself, mourns for his sins with penthos, and weeps over them. And so his little cell becomes a spiritual workshop, where he is constantly at work on the cultivation of the soul and on boldness before God, that freedom to stand and speak to him openly. When a monk goes about outside his cell, then when he comes back again, he is bound, more often than not, to come back having taken some harm, for what else is he going to do outside his cell? He will converse, talk, and scatter his mind here and there, and if those conversations are not spiritually beneficial, then the harm will be very great. Think of the time wasted outside the cell, and consider how many prayers could have been offered during it. If we take account not merely of one occasion, but of the countless times we have been so careless, we will find that millions of repetitions of the Jesus prayer have been lost, and with those prayers, all the spiritual benefit they would have brought. That is why our fathers, in their great wisdom, spoke to us in a few words, "Since we need to eat, drink, and sleep, all our attention should be directed toward practicing hesychia in our cell and caring for the life to come. When it is time for our assigned task, we must hasten to our obedience. We should carry it out eagerly, because we believe that by fulfilling our task we are doing the will of God, and when the wooden semantron and the bell call us to church, we must hasten to the church and join our prayers together there, in the temple of God, thereby helping ourselves towards something better." The tempter knows what great benefit comes from staying shut in the cell. So he pressures us, provokes us, agitates us, and makes us feel distressed, trying to drive us outside. He makes us feel as though we are going to suffocate inside the cell. "I have to go somewhere," we feel inwardly, to talk, to see, to hear something. "When I do not patiently endure this pressure, I leave the cell, go out, waste a good deal of time, gather up a good many sins, and then return. But if in such a moment I patiently endure this pressure from the devil, God will replace it with his own help and his own grace. I will feel rest in my soul, and I will come to feel that going out would be a great loss for me." Many of the fathers who lived in the desert speak to us about remaining enclosed in the cell. They did not even have people with whom they could speak. Yet where could they have gone to distract their minds with one thing and another? They said, "It is better to remain inside the dark cell, because there the nous will not be scattered." And so, when there is no distraction, the mind, the nous, will surely come into direct, immediate contact with the Supreme Mind, God Himself. Basil the New had a whole brotherhood around him, and yet he would shut himself away inside. Only when it was absolutely necessary would he come out, and then he would cover his face with his monastic cowl. His disciples, puzzled, would say to him, "Elder, why do you cover your face with your cowl? Don't you want to see us?" "No, my fathers," he would say, "it is not that I don't want to see you, but what benefit is it to me to see the light, since the Son of Man has come upon the earth?" For our salvation, these words were an expression, a proof, a tangible testimony to his hidden spiritual work and his noetic contemplation with God. He did not want his nose to be torn completely away from its continual theoria, its divine contemplation. That is why he covered his face when he went out to attend to his necessities. With such strict care they remained within their cells. This was their spiritual work, and through it they attained those exalted spiritual states. That is why they attained such great love for God. We, however, are weak and lack patient endurance. We cannot restrain ourselves even a little longer. We find satisfaction in talking and conversing, but because we do not exercise patient endurance, we inevitably have to endure another, entirely different condition. We lavishly squander the most precious time that God has granted us in this life. We do not realize how much we are losing. Of course, we will all know it with complete clarity at the hour of death. Then the mind will become clear. The circumstances will be right for the conscience to find its opportunity and tell us everything in the smallest detail. A man will see his wretched state before him. He will bitterly repent, ask for the time he has lost, and implore God to let him live so that he may make a new beginning, and many other things will take place. We must keep all this in mind, lay the matter plainly before ourselves, think seriously, and strive to exercise patient endurance during our free hours, apart from our duties of obedience and the services in the church. We must compel ourselves to remain in the cell, to read, to study, to pray, to make prostrations, and to say more prayers on our prayer ropes, for we shall need them. We must gather our nous back from distraction, meditate upon our departure from this life and the judgment that awaits us, and prepare our defense. We must also secure advocates to stand beside us at the hour of judgment. Those advocates are the saints, whom we can beseech to help us both now and, especially, at that hour. When a man is in his cell, his conscience certainly will not leave him in peace. It will speak to him about the will of God and prompt him to do something spiritual. He will take up his prayer rope or his book, or remember that he has left certain spiritual duties undone and must complete them. Let me do something more and lay up a little treasure. Why should I sit here now doing nothing? He may then think again, if I had gone out and spent the time talking, I would not have done even these few things. And while talking, I might have fallen into judging someone, telling a lie, speaking indecently, or scandalizing someone by what I said, and so many other things. You see how wisely our fathers counseled us to remain in our cell. Our cell. We need to establish within ourselves a firm governing resolve. That resolve must be courageous. Because of habit and because of the devil's cunning and malice, we feel this difficulty, the difficulty of remaining in our own nest when we have a free hour. The courageous thought must enter the battle and answer the pressure, the force of habit and the devil. No. I have suffered many losses, and I must make up for them. I must make a beginning. I do not know the hour or the moment when God will send the angel to call me, to take me, and to bring me to meet him. When the thought resists in this way, when it is courageous, the person will, of course, encounter some difficulty, but it will pass. He will compel himself a little, remain inside, and overcome. One victory, then two, three, five, ten, and the whole situation takes on a different appearance. It begins to become easy to remain in the cell, and then he will be able to assess the situation and see how much harm he suffered in the past. We also read the following in the sayings of the Desert Fathers. An elder had sent his disciple out into the world to sell their handiwork, obtain the necessities, and return. The elder sat down and wrote with his finger on the ground, "Who will come first?" Then he fell silent, and wrote nothing more. But his mind was at work. He was thinking, "Who will arrive first, the angel who will come to take me, or my monk, who has gone to sell our handiwork and bring back what we need. If the one from above comes, the angel, my guardian angel, the archangel, whoever it may be, what then? And he continued, Am I ready? Have I corrected myself? Am I in a state to answer before God? What does my conscience bear witness to? What does it tell me? He dwelt on these things, and surely his eyes streamed with tears. This inspired penthos in him, mourning for sin, and from that mourning came God's consolation and comfort. As he meditated continually in this way, by the grace of God he passed from one spiritual state to another, from praxis, the active ascetic life, to theoria, divine contemplation. Thus spiritual ascents took place within him, and through this spiritual meditation he was brought toward perfection. Who helped him with the music, and then, if death were to come, the man was already prepared. Whatever the fathers left us, they left as an example, as a light. Let us take it up as well, and walk the path of salvation without going astray. Let us also strive as far as we can to imitate the fathers. We make too many allowances for ourselves. People say, I am ill, I am weak. We are weak human beings. That is what we are. We are made of both soul and body, and we are weak. Some economia, some merciful allowance, has its place, yes, up to a certain point. Beyond what we are actually capable of doing, God will not demand more from us. Reasons. Let us struggle in these things during our free hours. Let us try to practice hezekiah, inner stillness, and devote ourselves to spiritual work. The grace of God watches over us and asks us to offer our willing disposition, our resolve, and the effort of compelling ourselves. The grace of God will accomplish the rest. All of us have some experience of the benefit we receive from the cell, and also of the harm we suffer when we are outside it. What remains now is for us to make a good beginning. It is never too late. The fact that God has granted us life and that we are still living is proof that He is waiting for us to make a beginning. The Holy Fathers made a new beginning until their very last breath. How much more then should we? Successes? Since our subject has been the benefit of the cell, I would like to offer a clarification, or rather, some information. During the day, as you see, I try to keep relative quiet in my cell. I may need to write a letter, or the telephone may ring, and I must be there to receive the necessary information and offer whatever my position requires of me. And because there is often a great deal of disturbance, you come with various matters to arrange things concerning your obediences and anything else? There is often, as I have said, a great deal of disturbance, and it exhausts me terribly. There are two reasons why, when you come, you find the door closed. The first is that the disturbance often exhausts me to the point where it becomes unbearable, because there is so much commotion. The second is that, because of the position I hold, I need time to pray for myself. Let us say there is a brother in need, or someone calls me to say that a person is in danger, that he needs help, and that I absolutely must say a few words to God for him. But when my door is constantly open and you are coming and going, often over trivial matters that are not very important, I will not have the opportunity to do that. I will have no opportunity to do so, and then I will be unable to help either in my own personal spiritual state or the souls who have so many needs. I am telling you this so that you will not be troubled when, sometimes, you knock and I do not open the door. This is the reason I need a little hezekiah, both to regain my peace and, in my own small way, to help some soul who is in danger and in need. Naturally, too many disturbances darken the nose and weary the soul, so that it cannot help another person. And help comes through prayer, for prayer certainly requires a person to be at peace and to have a quiet nose. A person must be able to attend carefully to what he will say to God. You can approach me especially in the church, and at other times as well. But when there is a truly urgent need, then of course you should come and knock. If, however, I am in a particular spiritual state, please allow me to remain in hezekiah, because otherwise it will be extremely difficult for me. I should also mention that, being human, I have limited emotional and mental endurance. Once that endurance has been exhausted, a person has nothing left to offer. And this strength is continually being spent, as you can see, because my position requires a person to have very great endurance. Yet I am weak, both physically and psychologically. Throughout all my years, night and day, I have cared for almost everyone. It is not only those here in our monastery, but also those outside it, because both in the church and at other times I must continually speak and give spiritual guidance. I have been charged to counsel them and to guide them, and naturally all of this brings on weariness. Such a person also needs a little time of stillness and quiet, so as to gather strength again, to recharge the battery of the soul, to give the mind and the soul some rest, so that he can go on carrying this burden so hard to bear, steadily and fruitfully. This is an immense responsibility, because, as you see, I become extremely tired while I am away. I return here and the strain continues. This is what I have done all my life throughout all my years, so when you see me remaining in Hezekiah for a little while, this is the reason. Either I will be utterly exhausted, or I will be in a special communion with God, both for my own soul and for you. And this too will be a help to you, because someone may have a particular need, and out of duty and love, I must help him. Now I return to our subject, so that we may bring it to a close. I say that we should make this wonderful, fruitful, and saving beginning, during our free hours, apart from our obedience and the services of the church. Let us constrain ourselves a little to remain in our little cells and labor to produce the honey of salvation. Let us please God through our lives and our spiritual state. Let us thank God for his boundless blessings, which he continually and generously bestows upon us, and let us fulfill his will, which is so great and precious. Let us also give joy to our guardian angel, for he rejoices when our lives are pleasing to God. Let us have mercy on our souls and give them food and drink. Let us bring the soul out of the prison of despair and hopelessness, where it feels spiritually confined. Let us give our conscience rest from its accusations, and in this way prepare our soul for the great account we shall have to give, for there is no other way. There is no escaping death, the first judgment, and the final tribunal before God. Since all these things are certain and final, and have been ordained by God, the matter of salvation must concern us with the utmost seriousness. Let us not live our life here lukewarmly or order it in a pointless and undiscerning manner, because one day we will bitterly repent of it. And I am the first, for I bear so many responsibilities and will have to give such a fearful account for myself, for you and for the many others, whose spiritual care I have undertaken, because I have not fulfilled my duty. Therefore I ask God to forgive me. Above all, I implore him very fervently to grant me illumination and discernment through the prayers of the Holy Fathers, and especially of my elder, who is in heaven, and who, I believe, intercedes for me, and watches over all my work. I implore God with all my strength to help me, so that I may not lose my soul or fail along the spiritual path. As though my own sins were not enough, I also bear the sins of so many other souls, and this great burden is unbearable upon my weak shoulders. And I would ask you also to remember me in your prayers, that God may help me and give me the strength I need, so that I may not sink or lose my soul. For I am trying to help so many people, and I fear that, in helping others, I myself may finally grow faint and be lost. For the other day, I read about a man who tried to save 3 children from the sea, because they were about to drown. He saved all 3 children, but when he finally tried to come out of the water and save himself, his strength failed him, and he drowned. The children were saved, but he drowned. May the grace of God help us all to struggle as God desires and to attain the great gift of salvation.